Support for WSJ Podcasts comes from Facebook. 3 months from now, 45% of the small businesses we love may not survive. Like the Russian and Turkish baths in New York's East Village. It's a place full of characters, young and old. Some that could have been written by Dostoevsky. It's where you can eat Siberian dumplings and get whacked with oak leaves. It's where buying small means buying into something much bigger. If you need help or can offer it, visit facebook.com/supportsmallbusiness. This message is brought to you by Facebook.
Here's your money briefing for Tuesday, September 15th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. We're 6 months into the pandemic, and for many people who've been afflicted with COVID-19, the hospital bill is coming due. The government and insurance companies have set up systems to avoid surprise medical bills, but some patients are falling through the cracks.
There are all kinds of problems because cost sharing has only been waived for this one illness. And it sort of speaks to this patchwork system of universal health care, but only for one illness.
So who actually foots the bill for COVID-19 treatments? Our reporter Robbie Whalen will explain after the break.
Support for WSJ Podcasts comes from Facebook. 3 months from now, 45% of the small businesses we love may not survive. Places like Cape and Cowl in Oakland, California. It's where locals let their geek flags fly, where everyone feels part of the club, and where the community is served through charities, food drives, and events that bring people together. It's proof that when you buy small, you buy into something bigger. If you need help or can offer it, visit facebook.com/supportsmallbusiness. This message is brought to you by Facebook.
Hospital treatments for COVID-19 infections can cost up to hundreds of thousands of dollars. Insurance picks up a lot of that cost for many patients, but not all of them. And if Congress and insurers miss some upcoming funding deadlines, it could mean a hefty bill for patients. Our reporter Robbie Whalen joins us to explain. So first of all, Robbie, when the pandemic first hit, the government tried to make it easy for people afflicted with COVID-19 to get treatment but not get hit with, you know, a lot of surprise bills. But the results weren't that simple.
When the pandemic first hit, Congress authorized the CARES Act, which included a couple provisions that were relevant here. One is that all testing ought to be free. The other really relevant piece here is they authorized $175 billion in what are called provider relief funds. And those are funds that hospitals and other medical services providers can apply for reimbursement for the cost of treatment. So there's two components, testing and treatment. And those funds were actually primarily used by people who were uninsured. So in theory, if you're an uninsured patient, you don't have health insurance, which is about 28 million Americans, and you get the infection, you go and get treatment for it, you should be able to apply through your hospital to have that coverage covered by the federal government. But however, with other types of patients, there are certainly some cracks that people are vulnerable to slipping through.
Okay, so how about people who have insurance? For people covered by Medicare, what has their experience been like?
Well, Medicare generally is a pretty expansive program. It covers most of the ailments and procedures that Americans who have it need, particularly older Americans. But there are about 10% of Medicare patients, which is about 6 million people in America, don't have what's called supplemental insurance, which is also called gap insurance. The result of that is that if you have a long hospital stay, you know, more than 2 or 3 weeks for COVID-19, and a lot of outpatient care, and perhaps even a lot of prescription medicine that you need to take, then if you don't have this gap insurance, you might end up paying a big out-of-pocket bill because you still have to cover the 20% cost sharing that Medicare basic asks of beneficiaries. So, and the reason for that is, unlike the private insurers, Medicare has not suspended cost sharing for COVID-19. And secondly, Medicare has never had an out-of-pocket spending limit like most private insurance plans have. And this is sort of a political football that's been kicked around since at least the 80s when, every few years, someone in Congress will say, you know, we should really limit how much Medicare beneficiaries can pay out-of-pocket so fewer people who have chronic illnesses or big unexpected medical procedures don't go broke. And it's always been opposed by the private insurance industry because the private insurance industry, of course, does a great business providing gap insurance to cover exactly these costs.
Okay, so what sorts of numbers are we talking about in terms of costs to Medicare recipients?
One of the reasons why we wanted to do this story in the first place was because there were a lot of reports coming out about the sticker shock of COVID-19 treatment. So someone would come home from the hospital with a bill for $100,000, $200,000, $500,000 worth of treatment from long hospital stays, ICU visits, ventilators, all kinds of very expensive medical treatments. They do cost quite a bit to the providers. But we really wanted to go beyond that sticker shock and sort of look at what actually the patients are being expected to pay out of pocket. And when you look at that, when you drill down, it's not nearly as much. It's almost no one who pays the full cost of a long-term care regimen for COVID-19. However, that doesn't mean that these bills that people are getting for out-of-pocket costs are insignificant. They're far from it. I mean, for a lot of families, they're very painful. And for example, we highlighted one family in our story from upstate New York who is a Medicare beneficiary who had most of her treatment covered, but also had almost $5,000 in out-of-pocket costs, particularly for medicine. She didn't have Medicare Part D, which covers prescription drugs, and she therefore had to pay a couple thousand dollars in medications. And this is a family that lived fairly comfortably before, $85,000 a year annual income from two working parents and two kids. But when the pandemic hit, both of them stopped working. The father lost his job. The mother was unwell, unable to work. And for a family like that, when you see your income fall in half, $5,000 is not an easy thing to come up with. I mean, they've had to change their lifestyle. They've had to pull their kids out of the private Catholic school where they go. And it's nothing to sniff at to say that somebody has to pay a few thousand or several dozen thousand dollars in out-of-pocket costs.
You know, it seems that a lot of people who have been hospitalized, aside from the money, they were not ready for all the paperwork involved. What's that experience been like?
Paperwork is a big issue. When you apply, if you're uninsured in particular, and you need to ask a hospital for financial assistance or to avail themselves of these federal funds that are available to treat COVID-19, cover those costs, it's almost like this, you know, this maze of paperwork you have to go through. And for a lot of COVID-19 patients, especially the long-term ones, they're suffering from what a lot of them call brain fog, which is sort of a long-term confusion, forgetfulness, or fatigue, or they've lost their jobs and they need to spend a lot of their time trying to figure out how to make ends meet in other ways. You know, going through this long process of getting paperwork, arguing with hospitals and providers, arguing with insurers, arguing with the government about what your situation is can be really, you know, a big burden on a lot of families. Another issue that I've had a lot of reader feedback about is the issue of whether or not particular problems that are treated in hospitals are caused by COVID-19. So in order to have your costs covered, if you're uninsured, for example, you have to have a COVID-19 diagnosis. You have to have a positive test. But I spoke to one guy, for example, who became ill in March, and at that point the testing capacity just wasn't there to do a quick test. So by the time he was able to get a test, and actually it was three tests in this case, they all said negative because the virus had left his system by that time. And he's got letters from his doctor saying, you know, he had severe lung damage from what is most likely COVID-19. But when it came to getting those costs covered with his insurer, there were all kinds of problems because cost sharing has only been waived for this one illness. And it sort of speaks to this sort of patchwork system, as one of my subjects in the story called it, a patchwork system of universal health care, but only for one illness. And it's really something that a lot of Americans have been advocating for a long time, is universal health care. But in a time of crisis, it seems we've only sort of set up a system that kind of looks like that for COVID-19.
Now, somebody has private insurance through their employer. Has that been an easier experience for them?
Right. In the universe of people who are unfortunate enough to get sick with the coronavirus, people who have good insurance to their employers are the luckiest. And the reason for that is because at the beginning of the pandemic, almost every big insurer decided to waive what are called cost-sharing agreements with patients. So if you, after a certain amount of money is paid, after your deductible is met, you suddenly have to pay, you under normal circumstances, have to pay 20%, for example, of your costs after that point. Those agreements have all been waived, and the insurer is now covering 100% of the treatment cost after a deductible has been met. In general, so if you have a private health insurance plan, you're in pretty good shape. And the reason why the insurers are able to offer to do this and cover these costs at 100% is because COVID-19 has actually been really great for a lot of insurers. And the reason for that is because fewer people are going to the hospital and having elective surgeries, for example, things like a hip replacement that are typically very costly to insurers when they have to pick up the bill for that. But if fewer people are going to the hospital because they're worried about getting exposed to the virus, that means fewer elective surgeries, lower cost to insurers, and you're seeing it in the insurers' earnings. I mean, a lot of the insurers are really going gangbusters on revenue, and but obviously that won't last forever.
Is there any sort of a tally or estimate of what COVID-19 costs are to the insurers?
There is a range of estimates that is so broad it's almost unuseful. But basically, the insurance industry has said that it's going to cost between $30 and $500 billion over 2 years to cover the cost of treatment of the disease. Another clue we have is from the provider relief funds, which, as I mentioned earlier, started at $175 billion, but have been drawn down to about $60 billion at this point. So while we don't know exactly how much treatment is going to cost, it's going to be somewhere in the range of several hundred billion dollars.
You know, Robbie, with all the talk of a potential second wave of the virus and widespread availability of a vaccine, maybe not until next year, the unequal affordability probably isn't going away. Has it raised the need to unify or even improve the process?
There's always room for improvement in the U.S. healthcare system, but there is a lot of worry, actually, about what happens in the fall if we don't have a vaccine yet and if a second wave hits. And the reason for that is because most of these waivers for cost-sharing agreements by the private insurers are set to expire at some point in October or around that, around the autumn. And if those waivers are not extended, then we might start seeing really big bills come due for a lot of patients. Same goes for the provider relief funds. If Congress doesn't authorize new monies for reimbursing providers for treatment of COVID-19 or extend those funds, then there's the same thing might happen for uninsured patients. We might start seeing uninsured patients getting big bills for out-of-pocket costs as well. So there's definitely some worry about that, and definitely some people who think that we ought to sort of, if there's a second wave, we're going to need a second round of support for patients.
All right, that's Wall Street Journal reporter Robbie Whalen. Robbie, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen for the Wall Street Journal.